Podcasting 2.0 for May 15th, 2026, episode 260, Tennessee Trick Shot. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcasting 2.0. After a 1 week hiatus, we are back. That's right. Everything going on in podcasting, and it seems to be quite a lot, is happening right here. I'm Adam Curry in the heart of the Texas Hill Country. Oh, wait, I should have mentioned, we are the only boardroom that operates on the fringes of podcasting. There you go. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who has a data set tailored just for you. Say hello to my friend on the other end, Dave Jones!
Yes?
I just have no idea what I'm doing right now.
Are you out of control? Are you off? Are you unhinged? Are you completely out of your gourd?
I call it being in dimensions. I'm currently in dimensions at the moment because we got in. So yesterday. Let me back up. So I had made plans.
Take your time. It's okay. It's going to be all right. We'll be fine.
I need chocolate.
Yes. Do you have chocolate nearby? This will help.
Right here.
Okay. There you go. Good.
So I left the office yesterday to come. I'd worked half day, came home, threw a few things together, my son, my daughter, and one of my son's friends. We jumped in the car, drove to Nashville to see the Black Label Society concert at the Ryman.
Black Label Society? I'm not familiar with this outfit.
How dare you? How dare you?
Clearly good enough for you to be driving all night to Nashville.
Black Label Society is Zach Wilde's band.
Oh, okay. I know Zach.
Yeah. I bet you've probably interviewed him before.
I hung out with him, actually, in Russia.
Oh, yeah, back when he was a drinker?
We were all drinkers back then.
Yeah, he's a crazy dude, man. But I met him in a Walgreens one time, which was an interesting story.
Okay, I don't know which one wins. Russia or Walgreens? I think it's a tie. It's a close call.
It's half and half. So anyway, we drove up there and, I bought these tickets back in like January. And you know, whenever you do things months in advance, you have no idea what is going to be happening in the actual time frame that the event occurs. I mean, like,
welcome to my life. Yes. You never know.
You know this. You're like, when things are 3 months out, you're like, oh yeah, it'll be fun.
That's great. And then it shows up and you're like, oh, what? I got to do what?
You look at the calendar. You're like, why did I ever schedule this?
Yes. I know this. Yes. I know this. Uh-huh.
And so, it was a killer show because it was, three bands, but one, Black Label Society was the headliner, and but Zach Sabbath was the one of the intro bands, it's Zach and it's a trio, Zach and two other dudes just doing like the heaviest versions of all the awesome Black Sabbath songs. So good.
Did you drop some acid?
Funny enough, I did not. No, that's usually part of my repertoire, but I didn't do that this time. It got to be this show, man. It started at 7:30 on the nose.
It went forever.
It was 11:15 and they were still killing it. And I'm like, man, we can't, we've got to drive 3 hours back to Birmingham. We're already pushing 2:30 a.m.
And were you in the truck?
We've got to go.
Were you in the truck?
No. Oh, well, thank goodness. No, we were in the Honda. And so we were like, we get going and everything. We finally get back. So we left with like two songs left on the set list. Mm-hmm. Got home about 2:30. I fell asleep probably about 3. And of course, you know, then my daughter has to get up and go to school. She has to be there by, you know, by 8. And my wife is the teacher. So everybody's up and running. So I've had like 2.5-3 hours of sleep.
Yeah. You're running on fumes, man.
Yeah. So then I start getting blown up from the day job with a problem there. And on top of that, so we're having to not like, we're doing the board meeting now, and then we have a Godcaster meeting after this.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the Godcaster meeting is over, we are jumping in the car and going to North Alabama for a 2-day camping trip.
Of which, and you'll be in the tent sleeping for most of it.
Probably, yes. So, I mean, it is like, so I'm trying to get as much of this. We haven't even put anything together for a camping trip yet. And I'm throwing stuff in bags and all this kind of stuff this morning. And then I'm going to rant here, by the way. So then what happens? The latest AI bullshit.
Who?
From these stupid AI security research companies.
Oh, Nginx.
The Nginx vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's called, you know, of course, you got to give it a fancy name. This one's called Nginx Rift. whatever. I mean, you know.
Whatever.
And so this is an Nginx vulnerability in the rewrite module of Nginx, where if you use unnamed regex parameters in your rewrite, which of course
everybody does.
Yes. Yeah. If your Nginx configuration file is simple, you do not name your parameters in a regex. If you have an incredibly complicated, you know, 400 line Nginx config, you maybe do because you have to keep your sanity so you'll know what's going on. But no, hardly anybody does this. So the vulnerability here is that somebody can get remote code execution on your Nginx if you use positional parameters in your regex as part of a rewrite rule. So that means if you have a rewrite rule on your Nginx proxy server, which proxying with Nginx is almost table stakes. Everybody does this.
Yep. It
is.
I'm listening carefully because after the Godcaster meeting, I have some patching to do.
Yes, I bet you do. Well, yeah. And so what happens is if you have a URL request from a client, from a browser, and the rewrite rule says, is a regular expression, and you capture parts of the regular expression so that you can use them later. So let's say you're I just patched the Podcast Index front end API servers, which had this problem, and there's two of them, and I just patched both hosts, and this would be a common version of this problem. So you have. So what you want to do is something like hide the PHP extension. So what you want to do is on the URL, you would have something like api.podcastindex.com/api/v1/podcasts. Okay. Well, podcasts may be a .php file that's doing the serving of the data. But you don't want to have for the browser or the API client to have to type .php. So you hide the .php, and you do that with a rewrite rule. And your rewrite rule would look something like this. It would have a URL path, and then you'd have in parentheses .*, and then after the parentheses .php. So you're capturing the name of whatever the PHP script is, and when you rewrite it, to $1.php.
Mm.
So you're capturing the name of the thing they're wanting to access, and you're redirecting it behind the scenes to the name of the script with the proper .php extension on it. Well, that is the vulnerability.
Mm.
Nginx rewrite module does not handle positional regex parameters properly, and so you can corrupt the heap and basically put executable code into the data area on the heap. This is, and the fix for this is to switch from positional parameters, which would be like $1, $2, $3, etc., to named parameters. So now you're saying instead of just simply a set of parentheses that grab the part of the URL that you're wanting to capture, you would put there's a syntax where you put a name in front of it, where you can, so that then later, instead, when you go to do your actual rewrite, you don't do $1.php, you would do $script_name.php or something like that.
Yeah.
And so this is the reason this is a rant
is because it wasn't an issue until someone published it being an issue.
Exactly. This is exactly my point. And I'm so sick of this crap, because what is happening now? And you everybody's saying, you know, things, versions of, well, we're not prepared for this. You know, there's going to be this explosion of AI model discovered exploits.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Fine. There's going to be, but these are what you're seeing, though, are AI security companies, startups
getting PR
by releasing proof of concept code. And the more outlandish and headline making and scary they can make it, the better.
Yeah.
And so they're going to drop a proof of concept and an exploit on the worst possible thing that they can find. And Silas is right. And then they're going to just dump it out on Twitter and Hacker News,
yeah,
and everything they can do to get as much PR as possible. These are exploits, just like the two recent Linux kernel escalation of privilege vulnerabilities. These are exploits that nobody, no human being was ever going to find.
Right.
And so there is no reason to publicly disclose these things. They should be private for as long as possible, as long as humanly possible. They should remain non-publicly disclosed.
Yeah, dream on, brother. Dream on.
But people got to make them some money. Ooh. And that's what this is all about. And so because some Silicon Valley security AI startup needs to get some more venture capital funding, all of us have to scramble and panic patch our servers as quickly as possible.
Well, good news. my servers are not vulnerable.
Okay. You have to be sure and check this. I don't know if this applies to you, but there's to be complete.
Yes.
You got to check everything. That means Docker containers as well, because Docker containers will be running Nginx as a reverse proxy in the Docker Compose stack.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be an Nginx config somewhere in your Docker Compose layers.
I don't use Docker.
Okay, well, then you should be fine. But if somebody uses Docker, do not forget to check those images, because they can have a vulnerable Nginx config. And now, since we've been gifted with Linux privilege escalation vulnerabilities, you can remote code exploit, chain it together with dirty frag or whatever they're calling that thing, and you got root on the host in about 3 seconds. Thank you, AI.
I'm so
well,
sorry.
Actually, it's not. Thank you, Silicon Valley bullcrap, is what I should be saying.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel your pain. I do. I find it hilarious that I literally asked Claude Code to go check if I had this vulnerability.
Are you sure that Claude Code did not nuke your repo while it was checking for the vulnerability?
No,
that seems to be a common occurrence these days.
No, it didn't. It didn't. But before we get to that, big shout out to RSS.com for dropping off. What did you get? A Spark RDX?
Okay. Yes. They sent us a DGX Spark.
A DGX Spark. Yes.
This is the, let me see. This is the Asus version. DGX Spark is a reference design. So this is the Asus version called the GB10. 128 gigs of unified RAM. 1 terabyte of NVMe. And built-in Grace Blackwell GPU.
And have you set it up yet?
It's soaking in it right now.
This, what a wonderful valuable gift donation that was.
That's a $3,500 box.
I mean, and I was on the email thread, and Alberto was like, "Hey, can I send this your way?" And you're like, "Well, if it's like this." And he says, "Yeah, it'll be on your desk tomorrow."
It was.
that was just. I mean, I couldn't believe how kind that was.
Yeah, it has already made a humongous difference because we went from. There's two things that we're doing with this box. It's currently running the inference for the spam classifier. Slop spam classifier.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's running. Oh, it's running so much better now. I was limited to a 9B model.
Now, do you want to just talk about this for a second? Because a lot has come out of this. Things happened very, very quickly. My head was spinning because now I don't know if you already were doing the data sets or if this accelerated the data sets, but the data sets then ship the. A data set that Alberto turned into the Podroll Atlas, which is just a visual explorer of the entire podcast recommendation universe at atlas.rss.io. So what are these data sets and are they coming out of this new system? Just give us a little background here.
So, yeah, it's amazing how much stuff can happen in a week.
I tagged them all in the show notes so people can go take a look at it. I mean, it's unbelievable what you're doing.
Well, all right. So we've had, you know, occasionally over the years, I'll either have a request for something or I myself will want a particular view into the podcast index data. And that, what'll come out of that are things like the music, you know, top 100 or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And the, dead feeds list and just all these various sets of data. And then, but what has happened over the years is that I'll just publish these one off and there's never been a place to like find them all, in one easy location. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at the website and we had this top level menu item called stats.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty much useless. It was just another version of the same stat that was on the homepage. So I'm like, we have this valuable menu space up there at the top. That should become the page where all these public data sets that have come out over the years, those need to be all listed in one location. And so I just, you know, I don't understand React. I'm not a React programmer.
Just here's the JSON. Enjoy.
Vibe code. I just vibe coded the heck out of this thing.
That's great.
Yeah. And so,
we have all live feeds. That's a SQLite file. Dead feeds, problematic feeds, recommendations, all media, video, music. Value enabled feeds, hosting provider stats. I mean, this is fantastic.
These are all things that already existed, but just nobody knew where to find them. And they get updated constantly, but there was never an easy place to discover them. The hosting provider stats is a good one. That's a list of all the feeds, all the live feeds, non-dead feeds in the index broken down by which hosting company they come from.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's a big list there. And I do a lot of like regexing in this particular data set to massage the different RSS feed generators into something that actually is legit. So like Blueberry is a great example of a hosting company that's very difficult to get a handle on their actual feed count because they have lots of different white label services and things that they do. And a feed may be a Blueberry hosted feed, but it doesn't show up under a Blueberry domain or a Blueberry generator. And so a few years ago, we worked with them and a few other providers that hosting companies that have the same issue to get them to put some better tagging in their feeds. And so now it's not actually in the generator tag. It's in a comment in the RSS feed. And so then I pull that in and then properly attribute that to Blueberry. So I feel like these hosting stats are actually probably the most accurate anywhere. I feel like they're very, very accurate to actually who is producing that feed. And then the 24-hour feed report, that's just, you know, an overview of a sort of a quick, dirty breakdown of what we think the last 24 hours of added feeds have been, whether like spam or what kind of a quick, dirty classification. Just a raw dump of the newly added feeds over the last 24 hours in CSV format.
Mm-hmm.
Hourly counts is actually quite a few people use this. This is things like total feed count, episode count, feeds with new episodes in the last 3 days, 7 days, 10 days, 14 days, blah, 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 blah. That's very useful. I know Daniel is using that. A lot of people do. John Spurlock.
Using what?
The hourly and daily counts.
Ah, yeah.
Stats tracking, yeah. Then there's a healthy Hive RPC nodes list. So if you're doing work on the Hive blockchain, this list is shrinking by the day.
Yeah.
These are the...
Why is that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak to the Hive network, but maybe it's struggling, but this used to have 5 API servers in it.
How's our gossiper coming? Do we have enough nodes up?
It's about, well, let me check. Actually, you know what? There's a thing that is not on this list, and that is the pee-pee monitor.
Oh, pee-pee monitor. Pee-pee.
You gotta monitor your pee-pee. I need to check that and see how many hosts we have in the gossip swarm. We currently have a total of 21.
Oh, that's not bad. That's better than I thought it would be. 18 active. Nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Oh, I see the link here. PP monitor. Oh my These things, goodness.
This.
Do you vibe code this too?
This website. Oh yeah, I would never put this together. Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah. So with a graphic like that, me. That is not me.
That is so cool. I like Hey Citizen Bathroom. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, live from the bathroom.
So, Hey Citizen, do you put your is that where you put your servers in the bathroom?
You got to get real work done in the John.
That's great.
So the Podping gossip swarm has been quietly running in the background for like a couple of months now with no hiccup. Mm. This thing is very stable now. And I'm desperate to get back to working on it if I could get this other crap out of the way. There's always something popping up, which again today, so we have more to talk about. But there's the healthy Hive RPC nodes. Is anybody doing Hive work on the Hive blockchain if they want to get a list of the current API servers hourly that pass a bunch of basic health checks to make sure that the API server is actually up and serving good information. And then the last one is the live tracking fire hose. And that is every episode that we ingest into the index, and it's updated every 3 minutes, I think.
Wow.
It's updated every 3 minutes. And the way that works is it's a linked list of object storage files. So it starts, the head of this linked list is tracking.podcastindex.org/current. And the way that this thing is designed to be used is that you start there with /current, and then it gives you a previous tracking URL property, which goes to the linked to the previous one in the chain. So what you would do is you would just consistently walk backwards through the chain using that previous tracking link, tracking URL in each subsequent call until you get back to the place that you last were. So in that way, you're using object storage almost like a blockchain. There's no signing or authentication, but you're using it sort of like a linked list in order to walk back without having to hit the API. So you can get massive amounts of data very quickly that way.
Now, I still haven't really focused on that. I've had enough issues with my machines getting crunched with all kinds of stuff. But you can tag spam, slop, and legit in the PP monitor.
In the PP monitor? No, not in that.
In the gossiper?
No. This is pure. The gossiper currently is purely just a.
I thought we had that. I thought there was a way.
You're thinking of the PI monitor.
That's right. The PI monitor. Right.
Command line tool that you can use. Yes.
Right. Okay.
But there's also more stuff on the podcast index management dashboard. I don't know if you've been in there lately.
Yes, I have seen it.
Have you seen? We can do new things.
Yeah, we can do new things. Of course, I've seen that.
Mark things as spam. Mark things as legit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's now an ad. As of yesterday, there is an admin panel for user account management. So if people need their passwords reset, developers, it's not dashboard. Listed in the menu.
Okay.
I'd have to. I'll get. Hold on a second. Let's see.
Curate. Oh, curate is nice.
Yeah, curate's new.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's cool. So what I'm looking at here is I'm an admin, and I see right off the bat, I see something odd here. No episodes yet. So I might even want to. That was added 38 seconds ago. Anchor. No episodes yet. But then I have. Let me see. Something weird happened here. I can hit play.
I was 9 years old in the dark.
So cool. And then I can hit legit. I'll hit legit. Boom. Done. Okay. This is so nice.
What that did is this all goes back to the spam. Like so much of this goes back to spam classification work.
What this really shows is that AI is not going to cost jobs. It is going to increase the workload for humans by a factor that we haven't even figured out yet. I truly have to agree with you.
Yeah.
And if it's not just because of more stuff that like you're doing, it's because you can do more stuff. And when you can do more stuff, you do more stuff.
You know? And anytime there's more stuff, you have to have more human capacity to just handle it all.
To do it. And I look at myself, I'm like, there's so much stuff I'm doing and I could sit on my butt more, but instead I'm like, well, let me do this. let me use my robot to, figure this out. Yeah, this is good. Okay. Another thing I can do. I'm just in teaching robot mode all day long for, make my life easier. But what I'm doing is I'm taking that easier time and creating more things, which is just more work. It's just, it's yeah, an now odd you loop.
Need, and suddenly you need an intern.
Yes. Yes, I need an intern. So let's talk about spam for a second. No, actually,
okay.
Let's talk about being on the fringe.
Okay.
Because we were laughing at Rob Greenlee talking about the Podcasting 2.0 group being on the fringe.
Oh, yeah.
They're working on the fringe. And so Rob posted this extremely long, I guess, apology. Let me see what it's titled here. Why fringe was the wrong word and what I actually meant about Podcasting 2.0.
Oh, where did he post this? I didn't even see this.
Oh, goodness. Oh, you've got to see this. This is hilarious.
Okay.
I'll put it in the boardroom.
No, Rob's a funny guy.
Well, he's funny for a couple of reasons. Hold on, let me put this in here. There we go. So what is funny, this is on Rob Greenlee, robgreenlee.com. Okay. And right off the bat, it's like, this article provides context about my comments on the New Media Show, episode 660, with Libsyn CEO Brendan Monahan, where we discuss Podcasting 2.0 RSS tag adoption and the gap between innovation and mainstream platform implementation. So right away, I'm like, AI. So he had an AI write this whole long thing. And you know, and it even did a summary at the end. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Rob, first of all, you were forgiven. You were forgiven right away. You know, this is no one's mad. We're just slamming on you. We're just dunking on you.
It's just ribbon.
What I was trying to say, what I meant to say is that market fit and timing play a major role in what gets adopted at scale. Larger podcasting platforms tend to move more deliberately. Their decisions are shaped by user experience, engineering resources, monetization models, product stability, support, complexity, and business. Rob, it's okay. Just say, I probably shouldn't have said that. And that's it. I say lots of stupid stuff all the time. It's okay. You didn't need to go through this whole thing. But it was a little insulting that you used an LLM to do that. Like, you don't need to. Like, come on.
Rob's website, Rob's blog is pretty slick looking.
Well, it's all written by AI.
I mean, the graphics and stuff. It's got him smiling on the sidebar over there. It looks good.
I get tired of documentation and essays and stuff that is clearly AI. It's like, no, don't do that to me. You know? And I can't even, my eyes start to glaze over. It's like, no.
I cannot handle another 5,000 word AI generated document dump getting sent to me for me to read and somehow digest and process mentally. Like, it is the work, that term work slop.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so real. It, like, you're working on a project or something, and somebody just wants to, like, throw something into a chat bot, dump out, barf out 2,500 words and say, hey, check this out. I'm like, man, what?
I mean,
what am I supposed to be checking out? I mean, like, it's like, I don't even want documents anymore. I just want you to Zoom call me. Just call me hash this out in 30 seconds.
There's that. But what I tend to do is I see one of these and then I go to my robot. Hey, robot, summarize this for me.
Exactly.
So I'm doing it right now. I said, robot, summarize this page into one paragraph. Here it is. Rob Greenlee walks back his use of the word fringe to describe Podcasting 2.0, not the substance of his argument, just the word, explaining that he regretted the terminology but still believed there's a meaningful gap between technological innovation and platform adoption in podcasting.
All the stuff you just read could be settled in one sentence by saying, hey man, we're good.
Yeah, exactly. Although I don't want to do Zoom calls, but yeah, exactly.
That's
it.
It is exhausting.
It is kind of exhausting.
whenever it's like that old adage, when every when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yep.
When all you have is a machine that does language, guess what you're going to get out of it?
Yep.
Lots of language and words and phrases and everything. It's just language is the nails.
I ran across an interview by a guy named, Dr. Michael Ignor. And he is a neurosurgeon. And it was really, when I was listening to this, it kind of blew my mind, because what was the big innovation in LLMs in the past year and a half to 2 years? I would say that is the reasoning model.
Which, by the way, I think is rapidly going out of favor.
Explain.
Well, reasoning models are incredibly slow. And instead of taking a dense model and putting layers, or basically rounds of reasoning into it, which slow everything down and don't actually give you a huge return, what you're seeing is what's replacing it is more surgical use of context being deployed to sub-agents. Like the big distinction here, do you know the book Ender's Game?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I think we've discussed it, actually.
Yeah, well, it's a sci-fi novel. And there's this one part in the book Ender's Game where Ender he's a young kid and he's going to battle school, and he goes to the top of his class in this thing called the battle room, and he's just better than everybody else at it. And so it's basically just like, it's on a space station and it's this zero G environment where there's all these obstacles and you're supposed to hide behind obstacles and use teamwork to defeat the other team. And what his big recognition was that why he was better, one reason he was better at it than everybody else is he said as soon as he enters the battle room zero G environment, he just forgets that there's anything like up and down. Basically, up and down don't make any, they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. All directionality, everything you knew about physics has now been flown out the window. And so you assume a new mental posture towards your environment. And that's sort of the way things are with context. Like every time you communicate with a large language model, you're starting over from scratch every single time. The coding agents hide this from you by using context.
Right.
And so the proper use of context is the thing that makes an agent or a harness either good or bad, how it handles that. There's no such thing as memory. In the general sense, there, you know, these are all meta things that we've layered on top of it.
Well, enter the, I'm sorry, you told me never to delete your Git repo, but I did. I'm sorry. It won't happen again.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you can overcome a whole lot of things that the model, it's like the model's like 20% of the issue. The agent harness is the other 80%. And most of that boils down to intelligent use of the context window. And if you just assume that every time you go into a conversation but every time you go send a prompt, it's brand new. Yeah. The model doesn't know you. It doesn't know anything. It's never spoken to you before.
This is the frustrating. Let me play these clips. This will take us to another place. So the way I have always understood so-called artificial intelligence is we're trying to replicate the neural pathways of the brain. And we're trying to replicate what the brain does. Is that a fair statement?
That is the way it's sold. That is completely that's complete bullcrap, though.
Right. So that's the way it's sold. And when it comes to reasoning, However that's done, whether it's done through, whether it's all a parlor trick, obviously, whether that's, you know, we're doing steps and we're making decisions, we're reasoning through a problem, or we're deciding to do something, which we as humans do. It was always my impression that that is what artificial intelligence, even the term intelligence, is trying to convince me that this is some form of electronic brain that is doing things. So now enter Dr. Egnor, who talks about reasoning, and he also talks about free will in this case, and the brain.
There are several ways of figuring out whether an organ does something. One way is to stimulate the organ and get it to do it, so you can prove it does it. The other way is to inhibit the organ from doing it and prove that when the organ's inhibited, it doesn't happen. Well, that can happen with the brain. While it is true that if you suppress the brain, we can't use reason and free will very well. If you get hit on the head with a baseball bat, your reasoning and your free will is going to be a little messed up for a while. There's a way of stimulating the brain to test whether reason and free will come from it using electrical stimulation. And there are different kinds of electrical stimulation. One kind of electrical stimulation is seizures. Seizures are just random sparks that happen inside the brain out of the blue that can have all kinds of effects. And one of the things that I've looked at rather carefully is the phenomenology of seizures. It is what happens when you have a seizure. And I've looked over the past couple hundred years, reviewed the medical literature of that. And what we find is rather remarkable. First of all, not all seizures make you go unconscious. There are many seizures that leave you conscious, and your body does things that you can't control. And they're called complex partial seizures. There have been probably a quarter of a billion seizures in human beings over the past 200 years, if you just look at the incidence of seizures in the world population. And there's never been a recorded case of a seizure causing someone to express reason or free will. You can elicit from the brain by stimulating it movement, perception, memory, and emotion. But you can never elicit reason or free will. No matter where you stimulate the brain, you can't make a person say 1 + 1 = 2, or say if A then B, A therefore B, modus ponens, or say I believe that it's nice to be kind, which is a moral viewpoint. So that goes right along with what is found in seizures, that you can stimulate the brain any which way, and reason and free will never come out of the brain. So it's perfectly reasonable to infer that reason and free will don't naturally come from the brain, because you can't make the brain do it.
I loved hearing this. Reason and free will don't come from the brain.
This is very similar to our, you know, this is just another version of what we've talked about before with the brain and the law of identity. You know, if you can find something about the brain that is not true of the quote mind, then they are not the same thing.
Yes. And this guy actually takes it one step further, and he tells us where this does come from.
So going back to something you said earlier, that reason and free will are immaterial aspects or parts of the person, powers of the person, immaterial. What does that even mean?
Immaterial means that, the source of these powers is not a physical thing. It's not a physical object. Immaterial is actually a fairly simple concept. For example, numbers are immaterial. That is, that the number 12 is an immaterial thing. That is, you can't say, well, the number 12 is located today in Cincinnati and it weighs 5 pounds. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. So there are many, many, many things that we think about, many things that are quite real. They're called universals in philosophy that are very real but are not matter. And reason and free will are abilities we have that whose source is our soul, but not our brain.
Thank you, Jesus. It's the soul. That's what it is. And never, ever, 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 ever is an LLM going to be able to replicate this. It can emulate, and it maybe can kind of come close. And I've been running into this as I've been trying to teach my robot what makes a clip that I want. Now, it can do clips. I can say, you know, cut this interview up, and it can build the arc with the intro, you know, getting to the point, the punchline at the end. It can do that. It can edit this clip. It understands kind of how long I want clips to be, but it doesn't really understand what I want. And I've been trying so hard to explain, like, you know, what I find funny is not the fact that Trump went to China. I find it funny that the Chinese actually have sanctioned Marco Rubio. He's not allowed to enter the country, but they got around it by changing his name to Lubio. I mean, the comedy writes itself, right? Like, Marco Rubio, come on by. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But it can't understand that that's what I want. You know, so it can only understand, well, you want clips, you want them preferably under 2 minutes, you want this. It really can't figure that out. And hearing this helped me, because I'm like, oh, it'll never be able to figure it out. It might come close, it might get lucky, but it'll never really understand what I want for no agenda when it comes to a clip. It just won't understand it.
Well, this is the difference between the way that AI has been sold and the way that it actually functions.
Yeah.
And this is how you create every single time. This is how the AI winters have been created, is by selling it as something that it is not.
Yes. And thank you. Hey Citizen, because I also don't believe it can actually figure out what spam or slop is.
It cannot.
It can't. It never can. And you know, the same thing like with music. Yeah, it can create dynamite music, but it can't actually listen to that music and say, this is good. It can't.
Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why it can't figure out what spam is, because there is a intangible quality to an experience of spam that you cannot quantify in any sort of language, or honestly anything. You cannot, it's unquantifiable. And a good example of this would be, there's a common spam tactic in the tax world where you'll communicate, where you get an email and it's like, hey, my accountant just retired and I'm looking for somebody to do my taxes. Can you tell me what your fees are? And I just have a 1040 and a couple of 1099s and you know, a W-2, and I can send you my last year's material.
Now give me a root password.
Yeah. It leaves that last part out. And it's like, can I send you my last year's tax return so you can give me an accurate quote on what it would be and what it would cost? There is literally nothing about this email that will trigger a phishing scam detection ever, because you'll get 50 of these and they're real. You'll get 50 of them and they're phishing. But I can tell you, I will spot the phishing one versus the real one 100% of the time, and I cannot tell you why.
Right. It's because
I can't.
It's because you have a grandmother. You had a childhood, you know.
Built
associations in the world between. And of course, I always have to keep reminding myself that the LLM can't actually hear my show. You know, I created an executive producer agent. I said, you know, okay, now this is your job. And it took me 2 weeks before I realized it just had a transcript. I didn't have a speaker transcript. It thought everything was me, including 60% of the talk on No Agenda, which is clips. It hadn't even gotten that far. It was trying to, you know, it saw this program as some kind of script that you set up with X amount of minutes of clips. And I was like, wow, it has no, it can't hear. It's deaf. Yeah. It's deaf. It doesn't understand. It doesn't understand humor. Really, it doesn't. It doesn't understand emotions that way. It doesn't understand when I say something that Dvorak finds boring. You know, it doesn't understand that. And I don't think it ever can.
Silas in the boardroom said, wouldn't a dedicated neural network designed for it to be able to pattern match beyond the capability of humans, wouldn't a dedicated neural network designed for it be able to pattern match beyond the capability of humans because humans cannot look at and memorize 4.6 million feeds? That what you were describing now, what you were describing is, I will say, go back in time and look at the attempts to use Bayesian analysis to fight spam email. Bayesian filters, this happened in the early 2000s, and it was and when it first hit the scene, was considered to be, oh my gosh, this is going to solve spam.
This is it. We got it.
No more
we
spam.
We nailed it. Yep, we nailed it.
and you know how much of a dent it made? Zero.
Mm-hmm.
We have more spam than we've ever had, yep. Ever. Humans are better at pattern matching. So neural networks and large language models, there's just a different, you know, format of neural network. It's just matrix multiplication. That means that's all it is. It's matrix math. And that's not how humans work. When you think about something, when you look at something and it registers in your mind, you did not do a math problem. That's not how you operate. That's exactly. Not what just
exactly.
Happened.
Exactly.
And so what we don't know how we work. It is undefinable. But one thing we do know is that the human ability to pattern match is unparalleled. You have the ability to assimilate multiple streams, dozens and dozens of streams of information all in one shot and immediately get a quote sense about something that you cannot define. And that is, you did not do math.
And it's wonderful to see someone like Tina, who will be looking at her email and she says, this feels spammy to me. Can you check? And the minute I check and I say, okay, yeah, it is. And here's why it is. You know, and there's a couple of simple things that you can look at right away. She then immediately has increased her knowledge and she finds those the next time. And I don't have to give her a written thesis. I just say, oh, no, look at this. Yeah. You know, and sometimes like, well, that feels wrong. And she's like, yeah. And so she's feeling that it's, you said something really important. You said AI winter, every single AI winter crops up or appears on the horizon because of the overpromise. Is that really the trigger, the overpromise, or it can't deliver on what was promised?
That sets up the collapse because the expectations of normies can't understand the reality of the technology. Because what we do is we layer these things on top of one another. We've layered this idea of quote knowledge and understanding, and we anthropomorphize it mm-hmm. into a thing. Because I hear it in the corporate world daily: is hey, couldn't we use AI to to quote figure out ...
Yeah,
like, and it's. You get so exhausted of having to go back and explain the tech from the ground up again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, look, maybe, but let me show you, but I have to walk you through the process of building a product or building a tool that would do something that approximates the outcome that you want.
And be prepared for it to do something completely different tomorrow.
the perfect example of this is, you know, Microsoft just released their Copilot function in Excel.
Ooh.
So now there's an actual Copilot function that you can call in an Excel spreadsheet. And the it is hilarious because the Copilot function in its description of how to use it, it says what not to use it for.
Accounting.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things it says not to use it for is, quote, anything that requires accuracy or reproducibility. And so people are posting like they'll do like they'll go into a cell and they'll do equal Copilot and then they'll put in a prompt and the prompt will be make a sum of all the cells above this cell. And all the, it'll be like three cells above there, like a one, a two, and a three, and it'll say 15.
Why?
I don't know. It doesn't tell you. I don't know. It just gives you a number, and it's completely wrong. This is the problem. People think because of the way it's been sold, they think that it's a general purpose knowledge tool.
Yeah.
But it's not, it has nothing to do with knowledge. It's only good at predicting the next word in a sentence.
Yeah.
Or the next code token in a source file. That's all it's good at.
What I've found
is anything else you have to layer on top of it with actual, like, real, you have to build a carefully constructed stack that contains this thing and keeps it with a set of guardrails so that it doesn't produce crazy nonsense.
So you're right about context really being everything for it. And what I've resorted to now, because you gave me a couple of good hints. So I'm using Opus 4.7 with the 1 million token context. When it gets to about 25%, it now automatically tells me, hey, it's 25% context, time to do a handoff. So I don't let it get all muddled, but right away, and it'll write it, and I say, okay, let's go. It writes its handoff, and it gives me a wake sentence, like, hey, welcome back to the world. Here's what you got to read. And then, you know, and it reads a document, which, and I've looked at the documents, they're pretty good. You know, it's where we were. And that seems to work pretty well within that 250,000 tokens. That's kind of the sweet spot. And I just keep doing it. You know, it's inconvenient because I'm at 23% context. You want me to do this now or do you want me to put it in the handoff document? Yeah, put it in the handoff document. That works pretty well. If you keep it within that level of context, I can get a lot done.
You can do everything you need to, as coding wise. Mm-hmm. You can do every single thing you need to do in a 256K context window. There's no reason to go above that.
Yeah.
There's not. And that 1 million context of like Claude Code and ChatGPT, that is inaccurate in the sense that what really happens is once you get over that roughly 25%, it will start to make more and more mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
If you start pushing into the 600 to 700,000 token context window, that's when you start really running into stuff like, oh, I accidentally deleted your repo. Sorry.
that was my favorite. You told me never. I mean, how many times I've told my robot how to make clips? And then I'm like, okay, you know, I have all these agents and all these feed parsers and all these sources, and it picks up stories and says, I'll go make some clips. And it'll make like 100 clips of 17 seconds long. I'm like, how many times have we gone through this? Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot to read my memory. Let me see how many memory documents I have. Let me see how many memory documents. This will tell you something. Let me see. I bet you it's a couple hundred at least. And I guess whenever it reads one of these documents, that takes up context space, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Depending on the, now this goes back to what I was saying earlier about the harness, the coding agent or the harness itself, it does all of this. It handles this context for you. If it's smart about it, if it's very smart about it, it can handle those things in a way that does not consume all your context, but it really comes down to that.
252. Yeah.
So there's a really good video. I'll find it later and post it publicly. There's a really good video where this guy goes through and there's a really simplistic test you can do for a coding model. And this test just says, it's really simple. It says, go and read this large source file. So just give it like a big JavaScript file that's, let's say this JavaScript file is 50,000 lines. Read this JavaScript file. Now tell me what lines 50 through 100 say.
Okay.
And you would be surprised to think that even the large models with a million token context will get that answer wrong about 10% of the time.
Wow.
They just won't be able to tell you what it just read. It just makes a mistake. So that's why these harnesses have developed the use of these elaborate sub-agent reviewers, because they'll do a thing assuming that they're going to get it wrong some percentage of the time, because it's just not possible for the underlying model to get it right. So they need the reviewer to go back and double check them every single time. If you just one-shot prompt an LLM model with no sort of like review agent or anything like that in it,
yeah,
you're going to get, I mean, there's, you're not going to get useful output probably, you know, in the 20% range.
You know, all that said, I think the face of computing could change. I see no reason why I should be using apps. I don't use even applications. I use a browser and I use Thunderbird for email, but everything else is like, nah, I want a spreadsheet reader that does this. 5 minutes later, I've got exactly what I want. You know, I can see a mobile device that really is appless. You know, get me my favorite podcast. You know, here's the list. Give me the most recent episodes. You know, here's what I have time for right now. Show this to me. I want to listen to this. Skip the ads. Mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, and any version of that. This is what I love so much about Omarchi. It's like every app I use, I've built. I just told the bot, it's like, yeah, build this for me. Says, I don't need the ribbon on Excel. I don't need the snapping grid. I need the smooth scroll just to be able to see this. I need the total automatically done at the bottom. I don't want to have to, you know, select and then do equal sum. I don't want any of that. Just do it for me. And it does that. Then if I need something else for a different podcast, I'll create a new one. This I can see. And I think that the removal of slop and all this stuff, I think that all moves to the edge, man. It all moves to your device. Maybe you have a device in the home that is doing some things for you in the background that communicates with your mobile device, and, you know, this just because it's easier to have that done somewhere else. And I think podcast apps will go that way too. I really do.
This brings us back to the DGX Spark.
Yeah. It's useless. Send it back. It's no good.
it's running the inference for the classifier now, and it allowed us to move from a 9 billion parameter model to a 35 billion parameter model, the QIN3635B, and with a 256K context window. So we've got a full like frontier model level thing as a backing agent for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much faster. So we can run that and the Whisper both to get the TTS analysis, both on this one box.
What are you using for Whisper? Which model?
I think it's the Turbo.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And the, so it's immediately had that effect and it's speeded everything up and made us have more accuracy. But then the true aim here is to get a custom fine-tuned model trained on the whole, on the podcast index database.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's phase two here. But in order to get to phase two, I have to finish up phase one, which is we need, like I explained before, a good corpus of about 25,000 spam feeds and 25,000 legit feeds.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have more than that. I would love to have like 50,000 of each. The spam feeds.
Just wait 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
It's coming.
The spam feeds, those are easy. You can get those all day long, effortless. The legit feeds are the ones that take a human in the loop to find. And so, what was that?
Sorry.
What was that?
I'm sorry. That was me. That was me.
I thought, okay.
No, that was my mistake.
So what I did, that's what all these data sets and all these kinds of that the curator and the dashboard, all this stuff is trying to set us up for getting a proper training set for the quote good podcasts. I hate using that term. I just can't think of a different one.
Mm-hmm.
Legit podcasts. Let's say that.
Legit. There it is. Yeah. Very subjective, but it's legit.
And so then the DGX Spark, the reason that was such an amazing gift is because the Spark is created exactly for this use case, training models on a small scale. That's where its wheelhouse is. So once we get these proper data sets, and let me correct James Cridlin from Pod News, I think last week, he was misunderstanding why I wanted these follower count uploads from the apps. It's mostly for this. We will definitely use this data in other ways, but it's mostly for this use case for the model training, because that benefits everybody. I'm not really interested in using it for search. The search that we have seems fine to me. I mean, it's we use some algorithms for it, but we'll definitely, it'll probably make its way in there in some shape, form, or fashion, but it's not just going to start like giving you.
Well, if anyone's going to figure out how to make it work, it's you.
Yeah. We're, you know, I just don't want anybody to think that we're going to start like only showing you the top, you know, the most popular podcast. That's not the way this is going to be.
Maybe I misheard it. Did I hear that on, Pod News Weekly Review Power, they were complaining about the Apple charts and all these Inception.ai podcasts are all in the top 20. Did I hear
that?
Oh, are they? Did I hear that right? I think I heard that right.
I don't know. I haven't heard this week's episode yet.
Well, maybe you have to look at it. That's a problem.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they left Spreaker. They're going somewhere else.
Yeah, the Megaphone.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to Megaphone.
Yeah, surprise. That's
good for them.
Let me see. Top charts.
Now it's Spotify's problem to deal with.
Let me see. Top charts. top shows. I think maybe they did a search. I think it was a search they did on like Charlie Kirk. Let me see. Charlie Kirk. That was probably it.
Yeah, that probably was it. Yeah,
exactly. Here it is. Charlie Kirk death, Inception Point AI, Inception. But that tells you something. That's an interesting signal. Because people are listening to Charlie Kirk death, Charlie Kirk biography flash, Charlie Kirk the aftermath, biography forever. People are listening to that.
Are they?
I think they are. Let's listen.
Nah, I'm not convinced.
Let's listen to this. Let's hear and see what this
I'm
is.
Not convinced at all.
Deep dive into the life and death
deep
of
dive.
Kirk.
Yeah.
I'm Emily Carter, your AI host. I want to remind you why that matters for this particular story.
I do not believe it. I'm going to prove it.
Okay.
It's coming.
How are you proving
it's coming? I will be proving it in the future. I've got an idea.
Get some tissue. It's coming. Sorry. Bad joke from my old porn days.
You sidelined me with that one. I know exactly how to bring receipts on this, and I will be doing it. I'm cooking it up as we speak. I had a conversation with somebody about it yesterday. Okay. I just don't want to reveal it because I'm afraid it might pollute the results.
Hmm. Okay. Oh man.
We got one more thing to talk about.
Sure.
HLS video.
Ah, yes. Of course. Yes. Yes. Yes.
What a beautiful mess this is.
Nailed it. It's exactly what it is. A beautiful mess.
Another one of the 47 things I was doing this morning was right before the show. I jumped on a call with Tom
Buzzsprout
from Buzzsprout. Yeah, and we were hashing out some stuff. And here's the issue with HLS video in alternate enclosure. Everybody wants this. I mean, if you're going to make a video version, stick it in the RSS feed, right? Everybody wants it to be open in that way. But the cost of abuse on your bandwidth to the hosting companies is absorbable when it's audio. It's very damaging financially when it's a video, when it's video bots downloading crap.
Well, and I'll just add one other extra thing. Porn.
Well, sure. Yeah, for sure. But just focusing on the bandwidth issue, that can really hurt. You know, if some bot goes wild and downloads, you know, 10 terabytes of data of video streams, I mean, on a podcast it really does change the whole dynamic. So,
of course,
what we're trying to figure out is if there's a way to sort of before these HLS video streams get into the feed publicly.
Yeah.
Is there a way that we can try to keep the genie in the bottle bot wise? And so we're just brainstorming some stuff, saying, okay, rather than having to just build this enormous block list of user agent, ASN, IP block combos.
Oof.
Yeah. It just seems so difficult. Rather than doing that, can we solve it in more of like an elegant way where we do something like, in order to download the HLS video playlist from the alternate enclosure, it would require something like an HTTP signature.
Isn't this exactly why, or one of the reasons why Apple is doing things the way they're doing it?
I don't think they care about the bandwidth. I think for them, it's the porn problem. For the hosting companies, it's the bandwidth problem.
Right, right.
I think there's two versions. There's Apple cares about the content. The hosts care about the bandwidth.
Yeah.
Because the hosts are already good at policing content. They know exactly what's going into their system and how to properly handle that legally. Apple basically is the reverse of that. They are just sort of, they're like us. They're a little bit vulnerable to people just sending them a bunch of crap that they don't have a handle on the content.
Right.
So they're a little bit at the mercy of this incoming content. So I think they have different needs. And so in the Mastodon ActivityPub world, you have a thing and we actually went over this back when I was building the Activity Pub bridge. You have a thing called HTTP signing or HTTP signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses a public key. So if you're on a Mastodon account, if you have a Mastodon account or any other really ActivityPub account on a modern ActivityPub platform, that actor is going to have, and when I say actor, in this context, I mean the ActivityPub host itself, because there is a, the ActivityPub server is also an actor. That server is going to have a public key. And every time they make a request to another ActivityPub server to do something like post a toot or something like that, they will sign that HTTP request using their private key and also send with the headers, send a link to their public key so that the receiving server can then authenticate that they are the ones that signed that request. Well,
shouldn't we have something like this already anyway? Like, yeah, this is a legit person with a legit key, whether it's a browser or an app or whatever. That makes so much sense. I'm a human. Here's my key.
Yeah. And it makes sense across the board, not just with video.
Yeah, I mean, for everything. Of course, it won't be so nice for the advertising community because we'll find out how few people actually listen to this crap.
Well, the initial thought process that we're having, and this need whatever comes out of this discussion really needs to become part of the Podcast Standards Project recommendations, is that we could do something like a simplified version of HTTP signatures. It would use the same algorithm. Everything about it would be the same, except that HTTP signatures, the spec, I think, requires a date header.
But ultimately, you still have to issue a key to a human being, right?
A downloading app client would have to publish a public key somewhere.
Right. So, but now you could have a million little servlets with keys. So how do you determine ultimately this is a human, they're watching or they're listening with this key? How do you make that connection? That's what it comes down to. Well, you can. There's just a lot of unfriendly ways, but we can do it.
Well, you can exactly what you said. Unfriendly, meaning we're going to keep like a public repository where we vet people.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Precisely. That'll be us, podcastindex.org. All your keys belong to us.
Well, you know, I actually see this being something, if there was going to be some sort of list, I see this being outside of the Podcasting 2.0 namespace. I see this as being part of like the OPAWG.
OPAWG.
OPOG.
OPOG. OPOG. OPOG.
The worst name ever.
OPOG.
It's the Open Podcast Analytics Working Group.
Oh, wow.
And do you know who the Open Podcast Analytics Working Group consists of?
Let me guess. I'm going to say Libsyn.
No.
Okay. I give up.
James Cridlin and John Spurlock.
Ah, OPOG. Yeah. That's yes. OPOG sitting over there in their rocking chairs.
Johnny and the Cridler are over there running
Cridler.
They're over there running the OPAWG, which as of right now consists mainly of a list of user agents.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it's a very nice list. Like it's very, Spurlock keeps that thing really clean and up to date. Hmm. So to me, this would be a great thing to add to the OPOG, would be a list of validated public keys. It doesn't mean that you have to be in the list. It just means that people serving HLS content, hosts, could choose whether or not they want to. To me, I see this as two layers. You have an HTTP, you require HTTP signatures on all playlist M3U8 downloads. You just have to have the HTTP signature to even get it.
Yeah.
then the hosting companies can opt for the next level of stricture, which would be, we have decided as a hosting company, we're only going to serve content to validated public keys that exist on the OPAWG list.
You know, the real way to solve this is, what's your Bitcoin address? Send me one sat, you're good.
That'll happen.
No, it will never happen. But I've always felt that every human being should have a public key regardless. Every human being should have a public key. This is the one thing that...
issued at birth, tattooed yes, on your back of your yes, hand and on your forehead.
Ah, yes. No. Boom shakalaka. And there it is. That's right. You will need that to do commerce. Oh, where have I read that before?
Grocery store, show me your public key.
Yeah. Everybody needs a pub key. I mean...
Eric P.P. said, that's how SSL certificates work. Send me money and I'll vouch for you.
Pretty much.
Yep, that's the way it works.
You know, it would solve so many problems. It would solve a lot.
The podcast index, we vouch for people without them sending
that's
us money.
Right. All the time. We just vouch. Why not? We're vouchers. Yeah,
with voucher. We're vouchers.
We're vouchers.
send your email to voucher at podcastindex.org.
Let's thank some people here, Mr. Jones. Okay. We've been getting lots of boostergrams today, which is nice to see. Right there, 49,950, which I'm thinking was supposed to be 50,000, coming in from Fountain from CLOS on Linux. And he says, 50K for supporting/bribing the podcast index censorship validated key system. You're in, my friend. You're in.
You got it. We got you.
You're in. Let's see. From coming in from the podcast index website itself, 4.7s from Summer Surf. He says, enjoying the afternoon in the boardroom. Thank you for your courage. 4.7s from Lyceum. Kudos to Alberto Batella and RSS.com co-listening and chatting with Mike Newman as we speak. Oh, there's Dreb Scott coming in with a baller, 10,000 sats. Voucher McVouch Vouch, he says. Yes, it's yes. working. Our system is working. We're done.
We just solved it. Yeah, we solved it and we got money.
Literally says, yes, this is how things should work.
I get to stop selling a Tennessee Trick Shot out of the trunk of my car.
I had never heard of Tennessee Trick Shot. I love that term.
Oh, the moonshine?
Yeah. Tennessee Trick Shot. That's a good show title.
There's all kinds. Every state has its own little flavor of
Tennessee Trick Shot. Dreb Scott, 1234, says, Dave, great job with those massive dumps of the raw data.
That's what I'm good at.
Big, massive dumps. 777 from Salty Crayon. Dave, could you elaborate on how your index filter marked a bunch of Fountain tracks as spam in the pipe? How did that happen?
I don't know.
I don't know. You got a row of sticks from Hey Citizen sent from the bathroom on his Cast-O-Matic. Yeah, that's where it comes in from. 777 from Mike Newman. True Fans Boost from PC 2.0. Thank you. We've got 1221 from CLOS on Linux from Fountain testing this week. 1234. So it's odd. The helipad keeps giving me different numbers because I know he sent 1234, but it's showing me 1221. Chad F 333. Dave off the dome Jones.
Off the dome.
333s from Eric PP. Pew pew. Yes. 333 from Chad F. This is all testing. Dreb Scott, 1234. Boost McTest Boost. Pew 2. I love people sending us money to test. This is all great. Thank you, Eric PP. Thank you, Chad F. And I hit the delimiter with that. So over to you, Mr. Jones.
On the music thing, I mean, a lot of that music is
spam.
It is spam.
It's just spam.
Yeah, and it's and all spam classifiers have false positives and false negatives. Every single one of them. It's not a solvable problem. So I think it just comes down to that. Because there has been a problem with people, and this is happening on not just Fountain. I mean, I don't know what Fountain's posting, but not just Fountain and Wavelake and all them. You have to be careful. People are posting copyrighted material.
Yes,
I'm seeing it on Spreaker a lot. It's coming through where people are posting like entire albums of, you know, copyrighted music.
Oh, really?
You can't do that. And so it's going to get caught. Where was I? I was looking at.
Yeah, I should mention this is a value for value project. You get this podcast and the entire podcast index and your data dumps, everything, all of that stuff. All of that is openly available for everybody. All you have to do is say to yourself, you know, it's kind of valuable what's happening over there. Let me send some value back to keep these guys running. And that's how it works. So you go to podcastindex.org. Down at the bottom there, you've got a big red donate button. You can send us your fiat fund coupons through PayPal or a Boostergram, which we always enjoy. We enjoy reading them. And hopefully Dave has now summarized everything. He's used the Copilot, Excel Copilot widget.
Yeah. Tell me how much donations we've had, and you get back, it's like carrot or something.
So I'll tell you something that I have trained my robot to do.
Okay.
So after every No Agenda show, we do credits, and the credits are executive producer, people who have donated $300 or above, associate executive producers between $200 and $300. So while the end of show mixes are running, I say, robot, do the credits. It goes into the Excel file. It pulls out the names from the corresponding values and puts them right into my OPML prep sheet. It's beautiful. It does that, I'd say, 99% accuracy.
Why am I doing this? You got this thing nailed.
Well, I don't have the spreadsheet.
That's true.
Yeah, why are you doing it? Tell your robot to do it for you. You got to be thinking like a broadcaster, man. Like, what is the crap that I hate doing? Well, I hate going through the spreadsheet and looking for all those stupid jingles everybody wants. So the robot looks at the spreadsheet, pulls up the jingles, and then I have my own spreadsheet reader. When I'm reading someone's donation note, I hit the cell, the jingle cell, and it loads up those jingles right in my player. That saves me half an hour a show day.
I have nothing like this.
It took me 5 minutes to vibe code it, baby.
Well, I can't even fix the spreadsheet that's coming out.
I'll have my robot show your robot how to do it.
Yeah, have your robot talk to my robot.
We need that. We need inter-robot communications protocol. IRP.
IRP. I'm a little afraid of your robot talking to my robot.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where your robot's been.
My robot is dirty.
That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid it's going to teach my robot bad things.
Very bad things, guaranteed.
In the words of my mom, it's going to be a bad influence on my robot. Okay, I forgot completely. Oh, Martin Lindescoe, these are PayPals. He sent us a dollar.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Martin Lindescoe. You and Mike Newman having a ball over there. Brendan at Podpage, $25. By the way, congratulations to Brendan.
Are we allowed to say? Are we allowed to talk about it?
No.
Blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. Bloop. Nope.
Woo! You saved me right there. You saved me.
I did.
Thank you.
I did. You're welcome. That's what I do.
See, $25. Thank you from Brendan at Podpage. Appreciate that. What we got here? We got Marco at, let's see, Marco Van Raij? R-A-A-I-J?
R-A-A-I. Rai.
Okay, Marco Van Rye.
We have the boost.
Rye. Yes. Sent us $10.
Thank you, Marco.
Oscar Mary, $200. Thank you, Oscar.
Oh, boy, hold on a second.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Keeping it running. Thank you very much.
I incorrectly classify his music podcast as spam, and he still sends us money. Joseph Maraca, $5. Thank you, Joseph. Appreciate that. Thomas Umstead, $100.
Bam! Shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
That beats, what is it called? Tennessee Trickster?
Tennessee Trick Shot.
Trick Shot, that's it. Trick Shot, yeah.
Years ago, I came for the podcast talk. Now I stay for the AI chatter. Adam, take it from a native Texan. The cure for cedar fever is raw jalapenos.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Yeah, I'll try that.
If you can take the heat, they'll clear your sinuses. Go podcasting.
Yeah, go podcasting indeed, baby. Yeah.
Mitch Downey, $50. Thank you, Mitch. That's the Podverse crew. That's straight from the whole group there. Lauren Ball, $24.20. Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate it. Christopher Harbarek, $10. By the way, seeing Christopher Harbarek's name reminded me that I am also going through and putting individual creator attributions on each of the Podcasting 2.0 namespace tags.
What?
It's something that each tag was initially proposed by a person.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for those people to get the credit for their ideas becoming what, you know, eventually led to real namespace tags.
Yeah, so that in 25 years, Adam Carolla will have invented it.
This will be properly documented so that Adam Carolla does not get credit for the chapter tag. Christopher Hart. So I'm doing it in this way. I'm doing, there's going to be a creator attribution. That's the person that originally proposed it and sort of sherped it the way, you know, all the way through to completion. And then there's also contributors that are getting a byline too, where those are people that had significant input in the discussion thread or the issue where that thing got hashed out. And so, like for instance, James, he's credited on the location tag. Alex Gates is credited on the alternate enclosure
tag. Do I get any credits anywhere?
No.
Oh.
You get credit for being awesome.
Seems empty.
No. Why would it seem empty?
It seems empty. I've participated in every single tag. I've published every tag available to man.
That's true.
I get no credit, man. I get no credit.
You don't even get credit for podcasting.
Give me some credit.
That goes to Corolla. Let's see. Christopher Harbaugh got a contributor credit on one of the tags. I don't remember which one. He gave us $10. Thank you, Chris.
Hey, didn't you and I create the value tag?
We did. Yes. Right. Okay. Me and you were co-creators.
I want some credit. I want the credit.
You invented the podcast enclosure tag. What? You trump everything we do.
I want the credit, man.
Just give me some credit.
Or hookers and blow. Either one is fine.
Yes. Send them in the mail. Mitch. This is Mitch on the personal side. This is Mitchell Downey, $10. Thank you, Mitch. Damon Kasajak, $15. Thank you. Appreciate you. Terry Keller, $5. Chris Cowan, $5. Thank you, Chris. Silicon Florist, $10. Thank you. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. Paul Saltzman, $22.22 every time.
Well, I love it.
Jeremy Gerds. $5. Michael Hall, $5.50. There he is. Todd Cochran, $30. And we are going to have Mike Dell on the show next week. And he will fill us in on Blueberry and what they've been doing and just the strategy, you know, or direction of the company post Todd and everything. It'll be good to catch up with Mike.
Hey, question on this. This pending signups for API access, I guess that is.
Yes.
These could all be phony baloney people.
Oh, many of them are, I'm sure.
Okay. All right. So, but if someone sends me an email and my own spidey sense says, yeah, they're okay, then I can mark active and send credentials. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and honestly, that's going to be extremely rare. In the history, in the last 6 years, I've probably had that happen. I can count it on one hand.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I plan to never look at that screen. It only became a thing because two people happened to have a problem at the same time.
I got it.
Yep. My typical thing is like we're a free service and we're donation run.
Send me money. Send me some credit.
We have rules. And one of the rules is you can't sign up for an API account from a free email address like a Gmail.
Yeah.
When people ask me, and people are like, hey, I'm trying to sign up with a Gmail account, can you do it? I just don't respond. And I'm like, no, that's the rule.
That's great customer service.
I'm like, I'm not going to make exceptions for what, because I don't know who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Go get a different, go spend $5 on a domain from Hover and get a real email address. And I mean, it's not that much to ask.
I'm with it's you, really not. Brother. I'm with you. I ignore all those emails.
You do. But you answer more than I do.
I do pretty good on answering. Yeah,
you do. Gene Liverman, $5.
Thank you, Gene.
Oh, that's all of our PayPals. Oh, we got some boosts, though.
Yes.
We've got some boosts. CLOS on Linux, 50,000. That's what you want. You read that earlier.
I did, yes. I'm going to give him a baller. Baller!
Shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
That's a nice boost.
Boost. How did I overlap you on that? Oh, I know what I did. Yeah, I know why. Because I did it later on in the show because I forgot to earlier.
Yes.
Okay. And that's all I got. The only other one I've got is the comic strip blogger, 19,000 sats through Fountain. And he says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Please bookmark this. https://wherever.audio/AndrewGrummet
Yeah.
Quote, it's a podcast listening software that works in browsers, mobile, and cars. No logging in and nobody watching you. All data stays on your phone, browser. Easy import and export for portability. Fast QR code-based sharing. End quote. Yo, CSB AI Arch Wizard.
Yeah, it's I love what Andrew has done. Andrew Grummet, by the way. No credit.
He's been on the show.
If he gets no credit.
He'll get it.
He needs a lot of credit.
No, he's going to get it. Because he's got stuff in the namespace.
Oh, okay. You get credit.
Okay, here's some credit. You get some credit, and you get some credit.
Everybody gets some credit. Everywhere.audio. It's a great audio.
A very great very business-like professional note there from CSB this week. No.
All right, brother. I'm going to let you go because you need to throw some things in the bag. You know, you're going to wind up on this camping trip, and it's like, what do you mean we got no pegs? What?
Yes. We're all out of pegs.
We don't have any matches. Oh, man. What are we going to do? And I'll see you at 3 o'clock, right? We got our early meeting. Exciting things happening with the guy.
I thought it was 2:30.
If it's 2:30, is it 2:30? Well, I got to hurry then. I got to rock and roll. All right.
Okay, run and rip.
All right. Hey, Boardroom, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for providing your very valuable feedback. And we look forward to seeing each other again for the board meeting next Friday. Till then, bye-bye, everybody.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting! Get some tissue. It's coming.